Welcome to Middle Grade Mavens, where two author mums discuss their favourite middle grade books, provide recommendations, and share insider industry tips for authors trying their hand at middle grade. Julie Ann Grasso is the author of the Frankie DuPont mystery series, cupcake enthusiast and part-time library book wrangler. Pamela Ukerman is a writer, dancer, and homeschooling mum who sometimes finds time for sleep. Both Julie and Pamela devour middle grade books, not only for research, but to share with their combined brood of four munchkins.
Hi, Julie. Welcome back to Middle Grade Mavens. This is our 98th episode.
Hooray, 98. Two to go.
And it only took us 98 episodes for us to go, maybe Pamela should introduce the podcast today.
Yes.
You know, just for something different.
I blame myself entirely.
Oh, you know, I just never thought of it. You do such a great job of it. Oh, only two away from 100.
Yep.
We should do something to celebrate. What do you reckon?
Yes. What to do, though? That's the question.
Maybe we should get out of lockdown.
I'll have a think. Yeah, let's get out of lockdown.
Coming. Anyway, we'll have a think. Yeah, you're right. So what's been happening in your world, Julie?
Well, my big news is I have joined the Family Engagement and Learning Team at the Hobsons Bay Library, permanent part-time. So it's the job. Yes, hooray. It's the job I've been doing for 8 months, but it's now officially mine, which is super exciting.
Yes. Congratulations.
Yeah. So what else? Oh, I've been experimenting with Instagram Reels, and we've been having a complete ball, you know, still in lockdown. So I guess some people don't even know what a reel is, and I will explain. It is basically 90, 60 or 30 or even 15 seconds of video uploaded with or without music. And it's basically just an endless feed of videos. So there's lots of trends that move really quickly. And, you know, you can actually save the trending audio and then kind of copy it. And so, I mean, I've basically been doing sort of book reviews to music with the sort of three concept technique, you know, this book in three concepts. And we've been having so much fun, and it's not always easy when you've got kids at home. So I did a reel for Karen Ganane's Time Catchers, When Days Tilt. And it was so funny because Giselle was kind of filming for me, and then Henry just kind of walks into the shot, and I just didn't even react. My eyes just kind of went really wide, and then I was just like, oh my goodness. And I said to Karen, we had a bit of a blooper reel, do you want me to post it? And she's like, post it. So we did. So please go and have a look at my reels, because it actually gets the book covers, you know, in front of people, which is the whole aim of it. So yes. So give a maven a like on Instagram Reels, please.
Yeah, please. And I love the concept of the book in three. The concept of the book in three concepts.
Yes.
It reminds me of was it Piccadilly Books, and I think Chicken House do the same thing, where they have the book in three words on the back, and one of them has. If you want to get a feel for that book, go to page whatever, some random, you know, not the first page, it's some random page in the middle of the book. And so you can get a feel for the book. And I just think it's a fabulous idea for kids to judge a book, not just by its cover, but in another way. I think it'd be a great thing for other publishers to take up. I don't know if, you know, they have the rights to that. But anyway, I think it's great. I
said that. I'm sure we've pounded on about that before as well. But you never know whenever, if anyone is ever listening. So should we talk about some books? Pamela, what is the title of your first book?
Yeah. So today we're doing two books each. It's an amazing bumper episode.
Like old times.
I think I don't know. Have we had a big break? I don't think so. Anyway, the first book that I'm doing today is The What on Earth Institute of Wonder by Lisa Nichol, published by Penguin Random House Australia on the 31st of August 2021 this year.
Oh, yes. I gave this to you from my stash. What was I thinking? Yeah. No, I'm very delighted you got to read a Lisa book finally. So tell us about it.
So I'll read the back jacket blurb first. A mind-boggling expedition into the secrets of the animal kingdom with only an invisible map of the human heart as a guide. Unless, of course, you count the talking parrot. What on earth could possibly go wrong? Sal has always had an affinity with animals, especially the lost kind. But when two rare and endangered creatures appear out of nowhere, life takes a detour into strange and uncharted territory. One elephant, one kakapo, one unlicensed teenage driver, one boy waiting for the world to end, and a 12-year-old girl with a very special gift.
Oh, sounds amazing.
Mm.
And what genre would you class this as?
I probably would say magical realism meets mystery.
Oh.
Yeah.
How did I hand this over to you?
I don't know. I don't know, because it's really right up your alley.
I know.
Something a bit different. And I had a bit of time over the school holidays. So yeah. I'm really glad you did. Yeah, I would say magical realism meets mystery. There's a bit of everything in there. Mm.
Oh, brilliant. And what was your overall enjoyment?
Yeah, this is the first of Lisa Nichol's books that I've actually read. And I knew about the, was it Vincent's Grandest Hotel on Earth? We've actually got it, but I just haven't got around to reading it yet. And I'm so glad that I asked you for this one. Thank you. Because my goodness, is Lisa Nichol creative?
Yes.
Like the things that she brought into the book, I was just gobsmacked. Like it was just so much going on, but you know, so much going on, but in terms of just, yeah, the creativity, not in terms of the plot. Like the plot was beautifully developed and you know, building to a wonderful sort of mystery conclusion. Yeah, I loved it. It was charming and surprising and mysterious and wacky, and I was just, it hooked me from the beginning. And I had no idea, like I said, I had no idea where it was going to take me. And it was a wild ride, but it really came together so beautifully at the end. It was one of those books that you just put it down and you sigh in satisfaction. There was laughter, there was heartache, there was action. And a beautiful message to wrap it up, and one very sassy, funny kakapo, I have to say.
Oh, fantastic.
the characterization was just masterful. Yeah, amazing. It's just one of those books where you just think, I wish I could write like that. I wish I could just bring that much into a children's book.
Yes, I said the same thing about Vincent and then
yeah.
Promptly gave up for 3 months, possibly.
Yeah. Like that. And I definitely need to read Vincent, because we do have it. I just haven't got around to it. Yeah.
And what age would you recommend this for?
I'd probably say for readers 9 and up. There's nothing too complex or scary or anything like that. So yeah.
Yeah. I'd hopefully agree when I get to read it.
I think I'm gonna have to send it back to you.
Yes. And you have a second book. What is the title?
Yeah, I have. The next one is My Brother Ben by Peter Carnivus, published by UQP on September the 28th, 2021.
Will you read the jacket blurb for us?
Yeah. Luke and his big brother Ben spend the summer on the banks of Cabbage Tree Creek. Quiet Luke sketches birds while Ben leaps off the jumping tree. The boys couldn't be more different, but they share the same dream, winning a boat so they can explore the creek properly. Then Ben starts high school and the boys drift apart. When Luke catches Ben sneaking out at night, he knows his brother's up to something. But what? A timeless story of birds and boats and of brotherly love that is bigger than a wedge-tailed eagle, bigger than the sky.
Oh. And what genre would you class this as?
I think it's contemporary. It's not historical. It's fairly recent. Yes, I think there's a mobile phone involved. Yeah, contemporary.
And what was your overall enjoyment?
Yeah, the story sounds quite simple, and it is. It's fairly sort of self-explanatory from the blurb, which wasn't the case with Lisa Nichols' book. But, oh, my gosh, it is so beautiful. I didn't want this book to end. He's another author whose characterization is spot on and you just want to stay with them. The writing is so simple but beautifully crafted. And again, I don't know how, but I've never read anything of Peter Carnivore's before, even though I know of his work and, you know, he's award-winning, but I definitely want to read more. The relationship between Luke and Ben would be so familiar to brothers, but the ending is so sweet and uplifting. And I love the running thread about birds throughout the book. And in fact, the book is peppered with drawings of the various birds of the area in which it's set, Cabbage Tree Creek. And it's just a beautiful touch. Manga Boy, actually, my 11-year-old was actually quite into birds for a while. And I think he'd really love this book. And I think he'd really appreciate, you know, that story about two brothers. Yeah. I reckon it might make a great read aloud for homeschool. I might actually just pop it on the homeschool reading list. And I think actually just was thinking about it, it sort of popped into my head that it reminds me of those sorts of classics like Colin Teal's Storm Boy and Tim Winton's Blueback, the beautiful Aussie, you know, set in nature with quiet boys as the main characters, that sort of book. So, yes.
Well, I have read Peter's picture books and they're also beautiful. So yeah. Well worth looking up.
Yeah.
And who will love this book? What age would you recommend it for?
Yeah, in terms of age, I'd say 8 or 9 up. And there's nothing harrowing or difficult at all for early readers. And I think it makes a beautiful read aloud, something to share together.
Yep. Well, I think, we've definitely ordered it for the library. So be really keen to get my hands on that.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Now, I was going to do a third book, but I thought rather than do a review, that I would do an interview instead, because the book is The 143 Story Treehouse, which is out today.
Yes.
I know there's going to be some pretty excited kids out there.
I bet, yes.
Book in the 13 Story Treehouse series by Andy Griffiths and Terry Denton. So, that's my other book for today, but we won't bother with a review because we know they're amazing, but listen out for the interview.
Yeah.
So, your turn, Julie. I know you're doing two books today, so what's the title of your first book?
Yes, the first is The Magic of Magnolia Moon by Edwina Wyatt, illustrated by Catherine Quinn, published by Walker Books in September 2021.
Aha, another Magnolia Moon.
Yes.
Would you share the jacket blurb with us, please?
Sure. For Magnolia Moon, magic is a way to solve problems. And when you're starting a new school and your best friend doesn't live across the road anymore, problems seem to come easily. In her latest adventure, Magnolia Moon invents everyday magic to help her navigate the pitfalls of friendship, school, family and being 10, a lyrical and an imaginative tale which highlights everyday wonders through Magnolia's curious and observant nature.
Gorgeous. And what genre would you class it as?
This is lower middle grade magical realism in a sort of contemporary setting.
Now, I know this is a sequel to the, what was the first one? Secrets of Magnolia.
Yep.
I know that you loved and raved about. So what was your enjoyment of this one?
Another absolutely beautiful offering from Edwina Wyatt. Once again, we are taken in by Magnolia's magnificent way of seeing the world, testing the waters of friendship and plumbing the depths of the everyday experience with all its confusion and mayhem and magic. Magnolia is a quirky little soul who loves hard and doesn't like to share her special people. Life is full of change and first days, and first impressions, and Magnolia learns bit by bit that friends are best when shared, and that best friends shared become even better. I love watching Magnolia's world gradually open as she allows herself to attempt new things, meet new people, and embrace life in all its wibbles and wobbles. I enjoyed coming back to this delightful little world and can honestly say it is a fine sequel to the much-loved The Secrets of Magnolia Moon, which I have obviously reviewed in a previous episode. Now, the illustrations, once again by Catherine Quinn, are just exquisite, and the cover is very fast becoming one of my favourites of 2021. Plus, if you have a look on our Instagram, I've done a reel for it. So please stop by and give it a like. Can I keep asking more?
And it is a gorgeous cover. I've seen the photo of it. It's beautiful. It's
amazing. Another beautiful Walker book. So
the publishers are really just outdoing themselves with amazing covers, aren't they, at the moment?
Oh, yes. Yep.
Gorgeous. So who will love this book? What age would you recommend it for?
Definitely a brilliant book for ages 7+.
Gorgeous. Great. And you have a second book for us today, and I want to read this book, so I want to hear more about it. What is the title of your second book?
Yes, it is Shadowghast by Thomas Taylor, published by Walker Books in September 2021.
Yay. And would you read the jacket blurb for us?
Yes. A creepy magician with a shadowy act, a legend that goes back to the dawn of time. Eerie-on-Sea just got stranger and darker. On the eve of ghastly night, a hypnotic stage magician, Caliestra, checks in to Eerie-on-Sea's Grand Nautilus Hotel. She's arrived with her entourage to put on a show, and she claims to be related to Herbert Lemon. Caliestra's act is so shadowy and strange that Herbie's friend Violet wonders if dark forces are at work, but Herbie won't hear a word said against his new relation. Meanwhile, folk are disappearing from the town and no one knows why. There is an eerie legend that goes back to the dawn of time about a creature made of darkness that devours the shadows of the living. Could the Shadowghast have really returned?
Ooh, I love these by the sea mystery.
So do I.
Yeah. So good. So I take it you really enjoyed this one.
Yes. It is any wonder I was delighted to be back in the seaside town of Eerie-on-Sea, having loved Malamander and Gargantus, the two previous books. The Grand Nautilus Hotel is always a place rich in intrigue and full of shady characters checking in and whisking Herbert Lemon and his faithful friend Violet into their mayhem. I loved the setup of this yet again, and also the mystery as it unfurled. I was turning the pages fast at the end, just wanting to see how Herbie and Violet prevail. And of course, I'm over the moon to say there is another book coming in Festigrim. And of course, ooh, I will be waiting impatiently for it.
Ooh, I didn't realize there was another one. That's amazing. And I just realized there's the other aspect of this book that really appeals to you, and is that there's a grand hotel.
Yes.
You know, it's got the mystery, it's got this, you know, the dark seaside creatures, you know, from the deep coming up, and then it's got a grand hotel.
I know. Could it be any more? And it's magical realism. So
yeah. And I have to say, I loved Melamander and Gargantus too, so
yeah,
definitely keep an eye out for this one. And who will love this book? What age would you recommend it for?
This would be great for 10+, and I highly recommend anyone who loves a creepy shanty town, odd and eccentric characters, and two very plucky kids who have to figure it all out to save the town yet again.
Amazing. I don't think my Scooby bed pile can get any higher, but might have to.
This one's for the Christmas list, I reckon.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my goodness me, the Christmas list.
Yes,
I
yes.
already feel like I'm behind. But anyway.
Yeah. That is it for our reviews, but we have Andy Griffiths coming right up to coincide with the release of the 143 story Treehouse, which is pretty much the most best-selling kids book series in Australia in like forever. And I do not know how any kid that I actually don't know any kid that hasn't loved it, including ours. So yes, we are stoked to have Andy stop by and talk to Pamela. So stay tuned, folks.
Andy Griffiths is one of Australia's most popular children's authors. He and illustrator Terry Denton have collaborated on more than 30 best-selling books since their first title, Just Tricking, which was published in 1997. Their much-loved Treehouse series has been embraced by children around the world and is now published in more than 35 countries, some of which have been adapted for the stage, and not only in Australia, but also the Netherlands, New Zealand, and America. But that's really all just the tip of the iceberg now that the Treehouse series is up to its 11th book. And I'm excited to have Andy here with me today, just in time for the latest release of the 143-story Treehouse. So welcome to the podcast, Andy. It's great to have you on.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So let's start with the 143-story Treehouse, and congratulations on its release.
Thank
Amazing.
you. Yeah. Been
Yeah, so
getting away with it for 11 books now. We can't quite believe it.
I wouldn't say getting away with it. I think kids are still waiting for the next one.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty good.
But
So I'm sure our listeners are familiar with the series, but can you give us a glimpse at the goodness that's gone into this particular Treehouse book, and especially as it was written during a pandemic?
yeah, well, it was what did we do last at the beginning of the pandemic? We were working on 130 story Treehouse, which was a bit of a mess because I'd done a lot of international touring in 2019 and hadn't had quite the time that we usually give the books to develop. And then when the pandemic began, I realized I had the golden opportunity to really work 130 properly. And that was an intergalactic adventure with lots of big action and intergalactic travel, the tree flying through space. And it was like an action epic film, but we hadn't done that. And we always try to do something different in every book. But I did promise my collaborator Terry and my collaborator and editor wife Jill that the next book would not be big, complicated action. It was going to be a little domestic story set in the treehouse. And I said, we'll go camping because I know Terry loves camping. I'm a long-time bushwalker. I said, we're just going to have a camping holiday. And the more the pandemic sort of came in, the more the book became an escape for us, as much as we know the books are an escape for kids. So I was able to create a camping level and go, come on, Terry, we're going camping. I'm stressed out. We're going to relax. And you did remember to pack the food, didn't you? And the tent. Oh, no, I didn't know. And so everything goes that can go wrong will go wrong. But it's a lot of it's sort of back to basics for the treehouse, a lot of interpersonal action, which is something the kids really love.
Yeah, actually, before I got to read it, my youngest son nabbed it, and I think he read it about three times, and he's declared it the best one yet. So,
Oh, well, I'm very happy to hear that. That's the first review from a child I've heard. So
you go. So
yeah.
that extra time helped.
It certainly did. It helped us go back to basics and realize, because after 10 books, you're a long way from the beginning, which was a bit of a mess around book. It was an experimental book that we never expected would go further than one book. So
Wow, that's amazing. And so you've got all these, wild ideas in each book, and I can imagine it takes a lot of brainstorming. And of course, as you mentioned, you're so busy with touring these days that you don't get a lot of time to write. So in terms of your creativity, do you put all your creativity into the Treehouse books in order to get that one done each year? Or do you get other ideas which you write down and save for later?
No, Treehouse has been a beautiful was going to say bucket, but it's like a beautiful framework that can accommodate any idea that I can possibly have, no matter how outlandish. I can create a level for it, and then that starts suggesting plot ideas. So I love the treehouse. It's what Terry and I were really working towards over many, many years. We've been doing this for almost 25 years together. I was obsessed with getting him into the main part of the book, out of the margins of the Just books, where he'd do a Mad Magazine style commentary on what was going on. I said, I want you to be right in the middle of the action. And you can tell the story visually and allow me to pull back on the amount of words. So that it took a half a dozen books when we started sitting down in a room together once a week to figure out how to do this. But once we did it, I realized I could pull back the amount of words and just say, hey, we live in a really crazy treehouse. Check it out. And I'd say, Terry, can you just draw a treehouse with 13 levels and, you know, bowling alley and sharks and anything else? And so the reader can inhale that treehouse in an instant without hundreds of words of description. So for me, it's like a dream because I'm not that great at description anyway. And so I've got Terry alongside and it's just developed beautifully. We just keep going back to it and more ideas suggest themselves. And it's a labor of love, but it is my full-time project. And the touring has actually helped it because touring puts you into new environments. You don't know which way the lights work or the taps work in a hotel room. The customs are different. And all of that is actually what we bring into the treehouse books, the child's view of the world. It's like, whoa, everything's amazing.
Yeah. I love that. And so when you come to writing a new treehouse book, you're working with some pretty tight boundaries. You have a set story structure, you have the set of characters, the world that's built. And I think there are some other common threads throughout all of the books, including a song, I think, in most of them, if not all of them, and a reference to literature. Is that right?
There'll always be references to literature because I did an honours degree in literature at Monash University many years ago. Mm-hmm. So I was lucky enough to read through the entire history of English literature. Mm-hmm. And there were certain key books that had huge effect on me. Not the least, The Life and Opinions of Tristram Shandy, which was written by Lawrence Stern in about 1790, who was doing a Monty Python style take on novels before they were even a thing. He'd go, oh, we're now going to have a black page and there'd just be a page of black. It was really playful. And he'd be telling you one story and then he'd forget about that and go off on a tangent that was much more entertaining than what he was supposed to be doing. So all of that feeds into me when I write. The songs and the poems, I noticed a lot amongst the books that I really admire, the children's books, Lewis Carroll, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, The Magic Pudding, Winnie the Pooh, they all have little rhymes and song breaks. And so that was kind of natural to me anyway, but I started thinking, well, these are also a great way to give the reader a rest and to play with words in a different way. And Terry's cartoons. Yeah, we're throwing everything we can at that emerging reader to try to hook them in some way and to make it a really pleasurable experience.
Yeah, it's great. And with that sort of those boundaries then, do you find them a hindrance or do you find them a help in getting a new book going?
An absolute help. You need to be truly creative. You need parameters. You need, because otherwise anything is possible. So you need a few rules and the structure of the books. I know chapter one will be introducing 13 new levels. So that's a project that takes a few months of collecting and usually I generate about 50 or 60 level ideas and just pick the best ones. gets harder and harder every book because you've got, oh, yeah, we could do that, but that's like that level that we've already got.
Yeah.
And my bargain with the reader is I'm not going to repeat myself, and we're not just going to give you the same old thing. We've got to make it different. So, yeah, there's levels. We'll start off in chapter 2 addressing a reader's question, like where do you get your ideas from, or what's my favourite word? And then that will quickly be sidetracked by some drama that's happening in the treehouse. And then I have 10 chapters to get to the 11th chapter any way I want, where they will suddenly realise they've got, oh, Mr. Big Nose has to ring up and yell at them that their book is due, and they'll realise they haven't done it. And that will be a constant pressure. He's the big bad wolf to Andy, Terry and Jill's. They're the three little pigs who, and he's going huffing and puffing. And so that's an extra pressure on whatever drama there is. So there's a few levels of plot going on. And then at the end, they'll fix all the problems, but realize they haven't done their book. And every time they'll go, hey, why don't we just write about everything we just did? And so there'll be a beautiful sequence where you see them working on the book that you've just read. And then you have to get it to Mr. Big Nose's office in some bizarre, original way, which will be suggested by the plot. And then
I love that. I don't know how you do it. Every book, there's some different way that they're getting it to the publisher, and it like you said, it's something to do with the story.
Well, I know that's coming. I know I've got to solve it. So when they go fishing, plot spoil, they don't catch a fish, they catch an old boot, which becomes a character. And then, of course, what's a boot good for? It'd be good, they could kick the book to Mr. Big Nose. So It's all got to kind of work logically, and we go backwards and forwards, weaving the story over many, many months.
Yeah.
So it gets endless revisions and chances to get it right.
Yeah. And I always love the jokes at the bottom of each page. I think it's not all of the books, but a few of the books. There's always something unexpected or a twist. And I love that it's never educational, but going for the laughs instead. And in the case of the 143-story treehouse, each page has a word of the page and a definition for that word of the page, but the definitions are there purely for the last. Do you get feedback from teachers or parents about this and any criticism for not being educational? And if so, how do you respond to that?
Well, I would think we actually are being educational, but not in an obvious way, because that comes from the word-o-matic level, which is a machine that knows every word in the whole world, except apparently for Quozjex, which is Terry's cheat word in Scrabble, and it blows the machine up. But we just thought, in fact, Ursula Dabowski, the current children's laureate, she wrote a couple of books called The Word Spy, where she said, you know, I've been a word spy all my life. And I realised reading those books that I was too. I just love words. Yeah. And so let's pick out a random word from each page and highlight it and give it a definition, which is obviously silly, often opposite to what it really means, or just telling you in the same way what it means. But I think for the word spies who are reading this, they're going to really enjoy this, and they're going to enjoy unpacking it and realising that we're being silly. And with silliness, there's still great learning to be had. We're playing with words, and that's a greater learning to me than giving them the exact definition of the word.
Yeah. And on that note, I think the Treehouse books are great for developing humour and an understanding of humour. Yep. There are many, you use many different kinds of humour. So there's the visual jokes, which you talked about, that Terry creates. And there are the unexpected gags, like the three wise owls. I love the three wise owls. And the wordplay and so on. So how do you develop and test your jokes to make sure kids will find them funny?
Both Terry and I have done at least 20 years of school visits and workshops and writing festivals where we've been up close with kids. I used to do four workshops or 4 talks a day, wow, 5 days a week,
yeah,
3 terms a year for many years. That's what sustained me while in the early years.
Yeah.
And what that was not only a way of making a living and funding a few months writing at the end of the year, but it was, I realized at a certain point, I am with the readers right here. Mm. I can try a joke 4 different ways and see which way makes them laugh the hardest. And I can test subjects. And so after a while, you develop a 6th sense of, yeah, I think this is going to play really well. So these days, yeah, and of course the last 18 months, we haven't seen many kids at all, but they are just part of us. And we know what makes ourselves laugh, and that's number one. We're not trying to write down to the kids. We're going, hey, this is a genuinely funny idea, and through experience, I think it's really going to amuse the kids too.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, whatever. It's still amusing to us.
Yeah. What amuses one person doesn't necessarily amuse another anyway. So,
well, we learned that the hard way over many books, with the Just books used to get an enormous amount of resistance from librarians and parents and some booksellers who would say, you really shouldn't show kids doing these naughty things because the readers will think that you're encouraging them to do that, you know. And I said, no. Child readers are quite sophisticated. They know that a book is not reality, and that you can do anything in that book, and the wilder the better, because, you know, it's like a thought experiment. What if you don't do the right thing? And do adult readers read a murder mystery and think, oh, I might go out and do a bit of murder? That seems like a bit of a good thing. Of course not.
Yeah.
And so it can be quite cathartic. And that's how I used to read. So I'm relying that kids could handle a bit of wildness. And I know a lot of parents love it as well, because we're not just another well-meaning but kind of dull book. There's we're having fun.
Yeah.
And that is the greatest learning, is that books are fun. You don't know what's going to happen when you turn that page, and they're pleasurable. And while you're turning those pages, you're picking up the skills that make us into good, solid readers. So you're getting practice to go anywhere, ultimately.
Yeah. And the Just books are still going strong, aren't they?
They are. They've been a little eclipsed by Treehouse. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting, by the time we got to Treehouse, I think the rough edges of the humour were knocked off a little bit. There's a safety in the Treehouse that's like the Treehouse itself offers a safe place, even though it's the most dangerous Treehouse in the world. Maybe that safety comes from their friendship, that Andy and Terry and Jill will have arguments and sometimes shout at each other or hit each other with giant bananas and be jealous and envious. Ultimately, they will come together and look out for themselves. You didn't get that in the Just books. Books is just chaos and anarchy. And that Andy character is really quite unpleasant. As the series progresses, he becomes more and more psychotic, which is funny, but not for everyone. Yeah. Whereas Treehouse is gently funny, with a few moments of, you know, slapstick humour, but not too much.
Yeah. And the Treehouse, and I think the Just books as well, they kind of break a common rule in children's books, which is that your characters, or at least your main characters, should be children, and there are no children. I love that. But how did you get away with that first? And how do you think that works so well?
They are students. They are students at school. Yeah. But the reason the character is called Andy is because I just can't tell a story any other way. When I'm with kids, and this is even before being a writer, I just love telling them with a straight face quite ridiculous things. I was in the bath this morning. Would you believe it? A shark attacked me. And they go, no, I don't believe that. And then I'll go, well, what's this cut on my hand then? That's a shark tooth. Really? So they go, nah. And I go, yeah, yeah, I had to hit it with a rubber duck to get it away. And so you're leading them in and they're challenging you to come up with supporting detail. And if I'm saying it's happening to me, it makes it feel believable to both me and them. So that's how Andy ended up in it. And when we went to do the Treehouse books, I said, I think it was actually meant to be a third very bad book. They were our first attempts to work together, the bad book, the very bad book, where everything was bad. That was the parameter, that was the rule. And we went to do the very, very bad book and Terry hadn't done any drawings except for a picture of his finger. And I said, well, that's going to be a bad book, isn't it? Just a picture of your finger. Actually, that could be a great book. We'll call it the very, very bad book and we'll just tell them, the reader will waste their time for the entire book saying why we couldn't get it done because Terry only drew a picture of his finger. And maybe we'll live in a treehouse, a dangerous tree, a bad treehouse, and that'll be the idea of the book. And so it'll be you and me and the kids. We're wondering about our relationship anyway from the Just books because Terry would draw me being squashed by a piano. Yeah. Did you know that Terry drew a picture of you being squashed by a piano? And I said, no, really? I go, yeah, yeah. It's on page 62 of Just Stupid. I go, right, when I get home, I'm gonna smash him over the head with a piano. And they go, do you live together? And I go, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's really annoying. And so that's how I said, we'll write a fake biography of us wasting our time in a treehouse. But when he drew that treehouse, it was so great. I was stunned. I said, I didn't know you could draw like that. And he said, oh, yeah, I used to be I was an architecture student, dropped out to work in a record store and then became an illustrator. So I just went, this is too good. You and me will be in it and we'll be neither child nor adult. We'll be that kind of self that we are when we write because we both naturally gravitate to about 10 years old, 11 years old, and when we get together it supercharges it. I didn't want it to be kids but I certainly didn't want adults around either because my great reading hero as a child was Enid Blyton, and her method was get rid of the parents in the first chapter, kids are into adventure real fast. And so there was a fair bit of design to make Andy and Terry look just like I want actually the reader to imagine themselves, that's them. So I'm saying Andy, but it's really I. So the reader is populating it with their own experience.
Yeah. Okay. And you were talking about the finger, and is that how Superfinger came about, or was that later?
Yeah, that was genuinely how Superfinger came about. So what am I going to do with a finger? I guess it could be a super finger. And then we started riffing on what would Superfinger do. He'd fly around the forest and point people out of the forest and help people tie their shoelaces. And then of course help people pick their noses, which is the gross out bit of that gag.
I love it.
But yeah, it's genuinely how creativity works. You start with the most unpromising, ordinary things. And through that process of what if, and how about this, and try that and draw that, you just come up with stuff. But it's not that you knew you were trying to invent that. That's what is the result of creative process. Okay. Yeah. And kids understand this from just playing. And I think that's what they recognize in the books, that we're always playing. It's just we polish it to a higher degree in the end.
Yeah. And there's a smallish reference to COVID in the 143 story treehouse, which will make it very interesting to look back on in years to come, and will be a reminder that we, you know, of what we did and what happened while this book was being written. Was that a must have to include?
Not for me. there's always a little section when I say we've been doing this. It's not always easy to write a book. And there's traditionally about 3 or 4 pages where I just say, Terry, do some, you know, just purely visual thing to show them having trouble writing a book. And he introduced COVID, and I was a bit uncertain about it because I want the books to be an escape, total escape from whatever pandemic or, you know, rotten thing is going on for the child. And I know it's worked that way really well for many kids during the pandemic. But he put it in and he'd labelled it. I think there were labels saying COVID monster and vaccination fairy who flies in to jab the thing. And I said, I think that'll get old, but if we take the labels off, then that could be, we know it's COVID now, but ultimately once, hopefully when the pandemic is a long distant memory, a new reader might come along and think it's just a monster with knobs on it. So you leave the reader to do the work, and that's a large part of what we do. We pull stuff away that the reader that you don't have to say. Let the reader join the dots. Yeah,
and then that becomes in future that'll become a historical reference, really.
yeah, it could do. He showed me once. I was sitting on the tree branch with an iPad in my hand. And a pair of headphones. And I was like, oh, I don't like that because I'm big on books. And I want the treehouse to be a kind of, well, it's not technology free, but I want all that stuff just forgotten about. And but yeah, Terry does what he does. And that's why the collaboration works, because he's always doing his own thing. And I'm doing mine. And we've got Jill there to adjudicate and, but we've all got to be happy going forward. Yeah. So it's a true collaboration.
Yeah. I think it was a good compromise because it's a way of laughing at the situation. I know it's, you know, even though it's not funny, but, you know, they're going through it and they do need some relief, some comic relief. And
yeah,
it kind of pulls it into that as well. So,
and I think it's really positive. You know, it says, yes, this scary thing is chasing us around the treehouse, but we get through it. And I think that's the positive message of every book that we write, is no matter what ridiculous and overwhelming dangers they face, they just keep punching and get through it. So, yeah, there is a morality in my books always. No one who does something evil gets away with it. Professor Stupido, who uninvents things at a whim, is eventually uninvented himself, you know. So you've got to have that basic level of morality, but you don't need to be standing there going, now, children, the lesson is, except I broke that rule in 190, what was that? What's the one where Madame Know-It-All is, 91 Story Treehouse. She's a woman who wants to know everything and is prepared to suck their brains dry, render them into morons. And she eventually explodes her own head with everything she's trying to cram into it. And then Jill says, you know, if only she'd read a book, you know, you don't need to suck people's brains out of their heads. Books are for learning, you know, so that's an ironic message.
Yeah, and it's funny too. So
yeah.
So do you have any interesting habits around your creativity or your writing schedule? I know you're busy with touring, so how do you fit that into your day?
Normally a lot of writing, and I know with illustrating too, a lot of it is thinking, considering, and just keeping thinking about it a lot of the time. So you can be doing other things and working on a book, but periods on an aeroplane or in a train or in a hotel room can be very creative, because what else are you going to do? You've got a pen, a paper, and so you lose yourself in it. But music is really important to me, and because writing for me is a form of, is almost songwriting. Mm. You're listening for a rhythm. You want those words to sound nice. And the energy I get from music and always have is I want to take that excitement that I hear and translate it into words, right. Which is, you know, I envy music because anyone from any culture can hear it. But words are a little more clumsy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, music and routine has been really good. A lot of exercise. I love exercise, and more we're finding out that exercise is very beneficial for creativity, for brain health. I think hypothalamus is now becoming the new thing. It grows with exercise.
Yeah.
So yeah, those things are important. Getting a balance of everything is, when you have too much of anything, whether it's any of those things I just said, too much touring, it puts things out of balance, and you're not going to be able to be as creative as you should be. Same with kids and electronic media. A little bit is, you know, the right amount is good. And I had plenty of television growing up, and movies are some of my most profound experiences, but they didn't crowd out books or free unstructured time.
Yeah, it's all different forms of art. And yeah. And we were talking before about how now that, you know, we're in the pandemic, you've got all this extra time, and you were doing a lot of touring. So, and I'm guessing you're working on the next book now. So how is that working? How's it working out now?
It's really good. Yeah, I've done the first draft of 156 Story Treehouse. It's a Christmas story because we didn't have one of those. They're trying to scam Santa by, they've invented endlessly expandable stockings so that no matter how many presents you put in them, they never fill up. It doesn't work out well for them, of course.
Never.
But I have done another, my lockdown project, my special one is a book of short stories. Will be called Top Secret Treehouse Tales, tales that were too silly to tell until now. And that's 13 1,000-word short stories of things that happened in the treehouse that use a lot more words. So where Terry's gone back to sort of decorating the pages, and it's almost like a just story, where Andy just starts off, you know, the day we put chairs up our noses, the day the sharks bit my head off, the day Terry turned me into a dog. And that's been really, really fun to have the time to just find a new way to explore the treehouse. And yeah, I'm hopefully it will be nice bedtime stories. They're about 1,000 words. And also take the kids who've have read the Treehouse series multiple times and give them a slightly higher reading level, but with all the familiarity of the books.
Yeah. Right. I love that the new Treehouse is a Christmas one as well. I think kids are going to love that. I know, though, my son, he would love if you made a Halloween one. So,
well, in 143, we go camping and there's the campfire stories, and we hadn't done a spooky kind of book specifically. And in 52 Story Treehouse, we invented the haunted house level. And then we never used it in that book. And I've been feeling guilty about that for many years. So in this book, we do scary stories. We have a ghost. Well, not just a ghost, a ghost of a ghost of a ghost. we have they have to go into a haunted house. They confront the Hobbyars. And the Hobbyars, I'm really proud about, because they were a feature of the Victorian school readers. There was a deranged story that's written in an easy-to-read style about a man, a little old man and a little old woman and their little dog Dingo, who live in a little house in the middle of the bush. And at night, the hobbyahs come creep, creep, creeping, skip, skip, skipping on the tips of their toes. And little dog Dingo barks and tries to alert the little old man, but the hobbyahs run away. And the man thinks the dog is barking for no reason, so he takes off his legs. And then the next night, the hobbyahs come back and the dog barks. And the man takes off his tail, and then he takes off his head. And then the hobbyahs catch the little old man and the little old woman and put them in a bag and poke them with sticks. This is a very famous story adapted from Ireland for early school readers in Australia in the early 1900s. So the hobbyahs are particularly creepy, and so I've liberated from that book.
Wow. And
put them in ours. But right. I wanted to give kids a little, a gentle, scary story.
Yeah, my 8-year-old absolutely loved the hobbyahs. He's the one who loves Halloween too, so.
Right. Yeah, well, Halloween is, I have mixed feelings about it because it's, doesn't feel Australian enough, but.
Yeah.
But I celebrate the acknowledgement of death and decay. And I think with what you were saying about the COVID appearing in the early part of the book, I think that's really important. And our books do go to those dark places. Mm. Life is not all sunshine and kittens, puppies and ponies. Mm. There are dark things, and it's better to acknowledge them and to kind of deal with them than to pretend that life is happy, because sooner or later a pandemic will come along and we'll have to deal with it.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, my kids have said to me, you know, publishers aren't like Mr. Big Nose, are they, Mum?
not our one. Not we have a lovely relationship.
I'm sure. I don't think there'd be any like that.
No, as I said, he's the big bad wolf. He's just there to huff and puff and threaten to send them back to the monkey house if they don't, if he doesn't get his book on time. But that Mr. Big Nose is really part of me. I'm the one who's feeling guilty if I'm not where I should be with the book.
Yeah.
And in general, Terry is a little more relaxed about deadlines. You know, he's, oh, look at my finger. Terry, it's not what we're meant to be doing. And then we go to Jill. Jill, we've made a big mess. You know, how do we fix this story? In the book, she fixes their animal problems. Mm-hmm. So there's an emotional truth to the characters. And, they're all parts of ourselves anyway. So I think the kids recognise that in all of us, there's a slightly angsty one trying to get things done. There's a Terry trying to just, mess around.
Yeah.
And there's a fixer part of ourselves. And when you get them all working together, that's psychological health.
Yeah. And so for my last question, what do you hope readers will take from reading the 143-story treehouse?
I hope they'll be careful of hobbyahs and not be mad and nasty to their dog. It was a true lockdown book, in that I want kids to just be swept away in a fantasy world and feel like they've been somewhere else. And at the same time, to have fallen even more deeply in love with reading and books and want to reach for another book and go, gee, that was a great way to spend that time. And, you know, as a bonus, if they're inspired to write or illustrate their own books, that's something that kids are sending us a lot of pictures and a lot of story ideas and populating it with their own families, which I love to see. That's again another gift. So we're not trying to teach an overt moral, but there's some serious stuff we're trying to do, and we often underestimate the power of a laugh. Being able to laugh with your child at bedtime is just the best. And Dr. Seuss knew that. Edward Cole, who wrote the Cole's Funny Picture Books, knew that. They were incredibly influential on me in my childhood, still are. It's laughter is a tremendous stress reliever and a sane response to a quite absurd world, I think.
Yeah, and they're a great escape, but like you said, you're doing something important and it, you know, it's in there.
Even if thank you. Yeah, no, I'm really pleased to know that and to get your son's great review. So, done.
There you go. So the 143 Story Treehouse is out on October the 19th all over Australia and then internationally. Yep. Thank you so much for joining me today, Andy Griffiths.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks for stopping by Middle Grade Mavens. If you'd like to know more about the Mavens, log on to middlegradepodcast.com or to find Julie online, stop by julieandgrassobooks.com. And to find Pamela, stop by www.ueckerman.net.